Well, welcome back, and I hope you had a good break together and were able to discuss some of the things we heard about this morning. My name is Tim Funk, and I'm the administrator at ACCFS, and I need to turn my microphone on. Thank you, Jimmy. And and myself and Brother Ron Messner will be talking about this flourishing through transitions, and so I... We really hope that you participate in this, and there are some people online, so I'm going to try to repeat some of the things, hopefully, that you say as we walk through this. I'm going to do the first part of this, and Ron and I are going to, I like his perspective as we walk through some of these slides, so he'll help me as we walk through this, but I want to encourage you to think about transitions and where you're at with transitions. I don't know, some of you may just have gotten married, and maybe you've gone from a transition of being single to being married. Some of you may moving from being just newly married to having children, or some of you might be moving to empty nest. Some of us are probably getting closer to retirement and maybe thinking about what that transition is like. So I encourage you to What kind of transitions, as you think of transitions, what kind of transitions are you going through today? Anybody want to share?
Double retirement.
Double retirement. Okay.
She's catching up.
Yeah, okay. She's catching up. That's good. Any other transitions?
Aging parents.
Aging parents.
Married kids. Job transition.
Job transition. Yeah, there's a lot there, isn't there? We hear some of these things, and some of them are really good transitions, right? Some of them we say, we're looking forward to that transition. Maybe a new job or something along those lines. But some of them we kind of get pulled into as well, huh? Do we get kind of pulled into transitions sometimes? So as we think about transitions, I think there's this movement that's taking place, right? It's from this settled place where we're at, where we feel safe, we feel comfortable, we know this place. It's like a place that we've gotten used to, and now there's something on the horizon or some place we're going, and sometimes it's not just one thing, but it's multiple things that are happening. And so we go from this place where we're settled, and we're going to another place, and a lot of times we don't know what that journey is going to be like. And sometimes it's, have you ever thought of, kind of as we're going through transition, maybe it's the transition from going to normal church to what we've been going to here lately, and it seemed a little bit chaotic, maybe, huh? As to, okay, everybody has an opinion. What should we be doing? How do we do this? It's a time of transition. And then we're looking for a place to settle again, and we're looking for a place that feels familiar. And so today, as we walk through that and we think through transitions in each of our lives, one of the things I hope that we can do is we want to talk about how do we be in Christ and walk in Christ? How do we walk in a good place through these transitions with Christ? And how do we use, so you, when you move from being a single person to marriage, or from being a newly married couple to having children, or moving from a time when you had children to where one of them gets married, you are still, you're the same person walking through there, the same God walking through there. Some of us that are a little older have looked back and we can see where we've been shaped and molded in places probably we didn't want to be shaped and molded. And some of us didn't get shaped and molded as easily as others. I'm probably one of those that didn't want to be shaped and molded. And truthfully, I'd say all of us. There's things, transitions we go through that honestly, I would not have chosen it. So there are these good and bad transitions that we walk through. So we're going to walk through some things here. I like Brother Ron, as we were talking last night, he said, I wish we would have put can in front of the second word on many of these, because it's transitions can give us the opportunity to bless others. And transitions can help us realize we are not the product of our circumstances. Transitions can elicit worship, and transitions can help us understand ourselves. And so I'm going to just cover the first one, and then I'm going to let Ron will bring us the last three of those. So first one is transitions can give us an opportunity to bless others. So what happens when we're going through a transition? Who wants to use that transition for bad? Satan. Satan, he wants us, and what's he want us to do through that time of transition? What does he want us to do? What's his key goal? Any thought?
Sell.
What's that?
Sell.
Sell, yeah. It's interesting you say self, because I think that he wants us to focus on ourself. He wants us to take our focus off of who is in control. And as we've gone through this time of COVID even, and as we've gone through even when we're raising children, we can as parents sometimes think, it's within my control to try to control this child. And we start to take things on that maybe aren't ours to take on. And we have to keep our trust in who we were and who we trusted when we were in that stable place. As we're going across this bridge or this transition to this other, to wherever this place has taken us, it's trusting God in that transition. So the thing is that we all have enough brokenness in our lives, and each one of us that we really, we need to share the truths of the gospel. And as a couple, as we marry people in the church, we say, now you have a helpmeet to walk life with, right? And so one of the gifts that you have as a couple is, as we heard even this morning with the pursuing and the withdrawing and all that, there's an interaction there, and you've got the opportunity as a couple to share the gospel, to remind each other of the promises of the gospel as we go through these times of transition. I have to have that. At least that's, and truthfully, I would tell you that my wife is much better at doing that with me than I am with sharing it with her. And that's probably sad, but that's true. And so the other thing is Satan wants to take us off of the focus, and he wants us to take it into our control. Jesus, we want to look to Jesus' grace, strength, and guidance as we go through these trials. And this last one is really important, guys. Showing Christian love to another person. And that's in our marriages, that as we go through there, that there's a time there that we need to, sometimes we have to bear each other's burdens as we're walking that together as a couple through a transition. So this is a time for show of hands. When we get into a transition, a lot of times when something comes up that we're not expecting, what happens? Do you react? At least I react. And so I don't really like the way the first one is done here, where it gets physically defend yourselves, but it's action. That first one is fight. It's take action. You know, you take action in a situation. Next one is flight, and that's, you know, move away from it, run from it. And the other one there is freeze. So how many of you are fighters when something comes up? I'm a fighter. I get in and I start to engage. Because I think I can figure it out. That's my first move, is I think we can figure it out. We can fight through it. How many of you are flight? Yeah. It's interesting, we don't have any couples here who are the same one, I guess, right? So how many freeze? Yeah. Yeah. So I think The interesting thing about these is, at least the studies that I saw said that these actually, we will do this. We will either fight, flight, or freeze when we're approached with a situation that's new. That's just our reaction. And it's the way we're made. I don't know that we can change it. And truthfully, at least in my situation, and I don't know about you, but I probably do it a little bit differently depending on the circumstance. There's times when I run.
So before you go, I wanted to ask.
Yeah.
So which is the preferred response to threat? Anybody have an idea? Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's fair. So there's not one.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's picking the, so in a rational state, we would pick the response that matches the threat. But most of us are not rational under threat, so we resort to our default setting and go whichever is natural to us, and it's not necessarily the preferred response in that situation. So the part of looking at this, it's interesting. It makes me want to ask some of your couples. When a couple both raise their hand on fight, that looks interesting. But, and I won't point out which ones you were. The people on screen can't see you, so nobody else knows but us. But it's just as interesting. There are some couples where both were flight. And so one's pretty dynamic, and the other, nothing happens. So it's understanding why you're getting in the situation you are and being able to step back from that, choosing to be rational in your response, but knowing that you have a default response.
Yeah, thank you, Ron.
Those of us who flight, we know that that's the best response. And yeah. We call that being peacemakers because that works good.
So the next one, actually, I wish that one column was up there first before we brought these up, because it's kind of that reaction, and then what is the biblical response when we run into some of these? And because we will, so as we get into this emotions driving fight or flight, a good biblical response there is gentle, easily entreated. Being gentle and easily entreated. The next one is assuming that our perspective is correct. And a lot of times, that's where we go first. We think what we're seeing, what we're viewing, we have the right perspective on it. And sometimes it takes us, if we step back from that emotion and saying, okay, hold on. We can speak what we believe is truth, but speak it in love. That's a good biblical response when we start to think our perspective is right. The next one then actually follows that, because it's very easy for us when we don't agree with somebody is to put a negative motivation on them. Basically say, hey, they have negative motives. And so the biblical response would be listen, clarify, try to understand. And then we start very quickly going to win-lose or lose-lose mindset. And this one here is really to seek win-win solutions. And that's really not, it's not that you're going to, at least for me, I don't quickly go to win-win, but I think about, okay, can I humbly listen to this and can I hear what they're saying and then try to figure out how can we work together on that. So, Ron, any thoughts on that? So, this one here, the top of the screen got chopped off. But I want to share this with you because I think it's on your sheets there. But I really like the James. I am always amazed at how clear he makes things about how to walk as a Christian. I mean, he cuts to the chase many, many times. And here it just says, who is wise? Who is a wise man and endued with knowledge among you? Let him shew himself out of a good conversation, his works with meekness and wisdom. So, and then the next one is, and it, again, it's how do we respond wisely in these situations? But wisdom, that is from above is first pure, then peaceable, gentle, easy to be entreated, full of mercy, good fruits, without partiality, and without hypocrisy. And I think those are a couple of scriptures to keep in mind as we think of wisdom and how do we respond wisely to a situation. Normally, a wise response is not aggressive, is to really try to consider the situation. And as we get to the next pieces here, what happens in many situations is actually in how many had a car full of kids, and some of you aren't quite there yet, but for me, I would tell you for Sunday mornings, going to church, and I like to be a little early. My wife likes to be on time, and the kids didn't care when they got there. Just they knew they needed to get there for Sunday school. Well, I get in the car, I'm ready to go, and one of them forgets their shoes. They don't know where they put their shoes. And we're going around, and so what happens is the fight becomes about the shoes. Where'd you put your shoes? Why? But that's what's really the issue. So the event is he lost his shoes. He can't find his shoes. I had four boys, and so they can't find their shoes. But what is the issue? What's really going on in my head? What's underneath all that, that right now I'm late for church and I can't find the shoes? In my mind, I'm thinking, well, I'd ask Ron. Ron, do you know where you put your shoes?
On my feet?
Yeah.
No, right, no idea.
There's a place in our closet for shoes, right? The kids have a closet. They know we're supposed to put their shoes. If they'd be better organized, they would have had their shoes. We would have been all ready to go for church. But so the big thing is just plan so that we don't have these emergencies before we go to church. And now I'm upset driving to church, and then I got to get up and have the sermon. And that's always a good thing. So anyways, so this event, a lot of times think of it as an iceberg. The event is the thing that's appearing above the water, and maybe that happens in your relationships where there's something that's happened and you're focusing on that event that happened, but it even kind of builds on what Caleb said this morning. What's under the water? What are the things that are really causing the conflict about that event that happened? Shoes, can't find the shoes. We'll find them somewhere. All right, so that's one of the things you find is a lot of times when people are upset with each other or when there's conflict or when we're especially going through a transition, what happens is we're not always talking about the same issues. We talk about the event, but we're not really talking about the same issue. The issue that's underlying all that, what is it? What is really at the heart of that? And so just thinking through that, many conflicts are never resolved because people are actually arguing about a different hidden issue, which is that kind of what's under the water of an iceberg. And then it is a loving act to work at understanding why other person is reacting to an issue the way he or she is. My wife said, why do you get upset? He just can't find his shoes. She's still going to be there in time from her perspective, but I like to be early. So, yeah. All right. So this one here, again, on your sheet, I'm hoping it all shows up better. So what happens is, it's interesting, you're going through two retirements at the same time. It's two transitions. It's a lot of times, as we look at when we're going through transitions, the reason we go to act on flight and fight and the reason we do that is because we're up in the yellow zone or in the red zone. And if we're down here, we can normally, this zone here, on this lower zone, we're thinking rationally. We're thinking, we said, hey, we can work through this. Oh, honey, I understand what you're saying. But what happens is when these transitions come or when some event happens that we have to react to, normally I don't stay here very long. I quickly go here. And then what happens is, when I react, then my wife reacts. And then we have a double reaction, which is really not good, because now we're, if one of us isn't in the red, we're both in the red. And so that's where, but that's what happens in transitions, is it puts stress on us. And that's where we have to keep, we have to continue to go back and trust God through this and really try to stay into that zone, into that lower part.
So I want to comment on that, but also we're going to have to be careful at the time. We're not getting through the slides. Watch it. So one of the reasons this is there, and I'm going to have you look at your page instead of that, because it doesn't show all of it. But it's not just so you know where you are. It's that no rational problem solving occurs unless you're in green or just into yellow. So if you have an issue that needs to be dealt with, first thing you have to do is get down toward the green. Not deal with the issue, but you get yourself in that place. If you're in yellow, it's tense. If you're in red, it's irrational. And so you'll spin your wheels trying to deal with something because you're in a place where emotionally you can't hear the other person, interact with the other person. So first assignment is to get your emotions down low enough. And sometimes that means go to bed and wait till tomorrow. Sometimes it means go take a walk. Sometimes it means just identify this is too tense. You know, right now, we're not going to be able to rationally talk this through. We're going to have to figure out a way to get our emotions down further first. So that's tough, because what do we want? We want to deal with it where we are. And actually, some of us would prefer to deal with it in the red, because then we have enough emotion to do it and pushes us forward, and we're upset and we want to, but it will not be effective. So last night, again, I mentioned, is a reflection. I think this is a part of where we are as a country, but also as a church. So in the United States today, if you think about the past year we've dealt with, so we're still in the what's real about the pandemic, what's not, what's rational, what's not, and creating just a lot of tension. We've spent, yes.
Can you read what those yellows are?
Yes. Do they not show on your paper either? Yeah. So
should be
the
high tension.
Yeah,
is
the
number
six is high tension.
Unpleasant tension is 5, and 4 is tense.
So it's really just starting from the bottom, wonderfully calm, all the way up to intolerably upset. That's not the words I use, outburst or panic.
Yeah.
So then we have, politically, things have been pretty crazy for the last 4 years or 1 year, whatever. But this, so this tension, in a sense, the whole world is up in yellow and toward red. Not just your marriage and not just the church, but that is where we're all functioning at. And it's making it really challenging for political parties to make rational decisions. It's making it hard for us as a church to make rational decisions. Our reassembly committees and elders, as we talk, we're having to make decisions which should be made in the green, but we can't get down to the green because there's so much going on. And it's not just about us. It's not just about the differences between us. That is the state of the world currently. So it helps to understand it, but we all need to work on getting down into a lower level so we can more rationally talk about things like responding appropriately in difference of opinion and where we should be stepping into as a church.
And I just add to that, as we're at that place, God is the same God here, yeah, that he was before COVID. And we can trust him in the same way that we trusted him before COVID. It's just, we're in a time of, there's just a lot of transitions, right, happening right now. But as Christians, the word says we're the light of the world. And so we can trust him through that. So the next one then comes, it's just a scripture to remind us that when we're in that place, that his grace is sufficient. And you know that scripture well. And he cares about you. Just like he cared when you were in that place where you felt settled, in that place where there's chaos, his grace is still sufficient. And what happens to me when I have been in those places where it felt like chaos, I've taken my eyes off of him and I put it on myself. And that's where I get mixed up. And so I have to go back and ground myself. Who do I believe? Who do I trust through this time? So This is basically talking about, as Ron spoke a little bit earlier, under significant stress, people can become irritable, rigid, and even irrational. Nothing, all or nothing thinking. That's really, it's catastrophizing. It's the world's falling apart. You know, it's all the, you know, it's basically, it's win-lose thinking when it comes to a husband and wife situation, that interaction. That's all in that space. It's the next bullet says, do your best to not taking things too personally. And so in this place, what happens is we start to maybe even say things that hurt each other. And I think as we walk through there, we have to remember we were in a place that was irrational. We were up in an irrational place, and here there's times when we have to go back and ask for forgiveness, seek Christ, go to those places. So these are a couple of variants on the Serenity Prayer, but in these times, these are maybe just kind of step up a little bit. So it says, God grant me the serenity to accept the people I cannot change, and the courage to change them when I can, and the wisdom to know that it's me. How many times have we tried to change the other person? I have been working to change my wife into, the, you know, I find out that it's actually me that has to, I have to work on myself. I am the one. And so the next one, though, gets a little more actionable here. It says, it's hard to read that up there. Lord, grant me the strength to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and forgiveness when I finally snap. And that true, that plays out as well. And then the next one, Lord, grant me the serenity to accept the stupid people the way they are, courage to maintain my self-control, and wisdom to know that if I act on it, I will go to jail. So the point is we're all smiling, but there's a bit of truth in those things, isn't there? In each one of those, we know that that's why it kind of rings true as we're talking through them. So, yeah. So I'm going to let Ron here lead us through the next ones here as we go through the next qualities.
So I have to own up, those last two I had to talk Tim into putting in there. But I liked them, but as soon as I read them, they struck me funny. And it's for that reason that the root of all good humor is that it's true. There's an element of truth in it. So some of these I'm going to go through fairly quickly, and I need... Okay. I have to figure out the buttons. So we're going to this a different clicker than we had last night. Okay, so the first... Let me back up, just capture this. So transitions, they can help us realize we're not a product of our circumstances. So you have these slides, so if I skip over a couple, just we need to be done, I think, by 11, right?
Yeah.
So I want to be careful to touch on each one. Transitions will not necessarily easily help us to know we're not a product of our circumstances, because our natural inclination is to be this, I can't help it. That's the world around me. That's what's occurring. Transitions provide the opportunity to realize that's not true, that you're not just a product of what's going on around you. And it helps us to focus on the things that we need to be. So this recognition that Christ is still the rock, that we are there, that didn't change. Circumstances change, but the bigger reality stayed the same. And so we can stay the same in that more trusting place. So when our sense of well-being is over-identified with circumstances, we tend to look for solutions that are not going to happen, either somebody else to fix it or a silver bullet to happen, as opposed to recognizing when you're going through that transition, it probably is as hard as you think it is. But it doesn't have to change who you are. It doesn't have to change how you respond. And as a couple, you can stay in a good place as long as you're not looking for a silver bullet that's not going to happen. If there's a solution, find it. I mean, if you have a job and finances are tight and it's not paid enough and somebody offers you a job that pays better, that's a good solution. That's a great thing. But don't expect that's going to always be the solution. The solution has to be stay well-grounded. So it's an opportunity to recognize that grounding. So faith is practiced in transitions. So this is an opportunity to step into what we believe. It's challenging. Again, I'm just going to going to repeat the piece. We naturally go to wanting the situation around us to support our faith, as opposed to our faith supporting us through the situation which is around us. So it has to be very intentional. We don't naturally go there. Most of us would say, would acknowledge that our faith is strongest when the situation's resolved and we know the answer. Our faith isn't as good at the beginning when we're looking into and trying to trust that it's going to be okay. But it is an opportunity to practice faith. So God's not invested in us feeling certain about our circumstances. It's not, he can't teach us to trust him when our circumstances are all good or predictable. He can only teach us to trust him when they're uncertain. So that encouragement, while we don't like it, but to see it as an opportunity. So the third redemptive quality, transitions can elicit worship. Again, I wouldn't say they do. I think, I'm not going to do a show of hands here, but I think most of us would have to acknowledge that difficult transition. So if the transition is that you get to retire, you've had a good career, and you're looking forward to retirement, or the transition is you've been looking forward to having a child, and there's one coming, or you've been single, and now you're engaged. And so those elicit worship, but perhaps for the wrong reason. It's very easy to be worshipful when, like, all these good things are happening. Isn't God good? It's more challenging to be worshipful when these challenging things are happening, even things we would see as bad. But it is an opportunity to step into worship if we choose to. So these are all about work. They're opportunities to do, but we wouldn't say that they naturally occur. So for the most part, we know there's welcome transitions. These are the ones that I would say draw us closer to God naturally. So marriage, retirement, Ken, if it's something we're looking forward to. Both Tim and I are talking about retirement. Mine's coming up fairly soon. And honestly, I don't know yet whether it's a good transition or not because I can't see what's on the other side of that. But I'm certainly looking forward to not setting the alarm every morning and not having certain decisions on my shoulders. Births, graduations, career hires, unwelcome transitions. So again, these are not always unwelcome. Death, so we're talking about an untimely death or a tragic death. Sometimes death comes at a good time, not, well, even for ourselves, but I'm saying for others. When we see a parent or a grandparent at a good place in their life and life's starting to get hard and they can go peacefully, so it's not always a bad transition, but we're referring to when it's challenging because we weren't ready, it was seemed untimely, loss of health, illness, unfavorable moves. So just this point that on one side, the welcome transitions naturally take us to God. The unwelcome ones, we need to be intentional in making those worshipful. That question of, okay, where is God in this? Is he sustaining me? Can you worship him through those? Can you still praise him when you're in this unknown or fearful place? And we can, but it has to be very intentional. You're probably familiar, at least at some level, this, the three phases of grief. Some of us who are older go to the five stages. Last night it took me about 15 minutes to remember the Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, which those of you who are over 50 would remember she was the guru about grieving, and still is in many ways. This reduced it down a bit to more the categories of reaction. So the first, when we're grieving, so this isn't necessarily just in death. This is losing a job, losing a child, having to move, you know, all those kinds of things, is this fight back. Our initial is, no, this isn't happening to me. I won't let it. I have to stop it because it's unacceptable. So that may be shock, confusion, denial, all those. The point I want to make in these is you can't skip these. So if these happen to you, if you go through this business that you built up and then it collapsed in the pandemic, you have to go through this stage. There's not something the matter with you if you fight back against things which are unacceptable. You just need to recognize that's the stage you're in and prepare to move to additional ones. But this is not pathological. It's not a wrong way to respond. It's a reality. And then despair, this, what am I going to do? So the first is, no, I won't. No, you can't make me. The despair is the world's falling apart and what's going to happen. And then the last of the grieving stages, so this doesn't go to the resolution, which is what the Elizabeth Kubler-Ross stuff does, her last, is the detachment. And why should I care? And I can't do anything about it anyway. Kind of this helpless state, which is not a functional state. It's a very dysfunctional place to be. Most of us have to go through that before we can go to the action phase. We have to get through the anger, the oh no, the who cares, I can't do anything about it anyway, and then back to this place, which when we talk about worship, that's that re-engaging with God again about, well, okay, how are we going to do this? But understand, we're going to go through those. If you think about like the book of Job, he had to get through those before he could engage with God again. And God really didn't challenge him until he was through several of those stages when he finally said, who are you to tell me, who created the world, how I should think? And Job started to back up then. But he had gotten to that detached phase where God could intervene again in an action kind of way. So just a reminder, I'm not going to go through all of this, but that we have a high priest which cannot be touched with the feeling. I said this wrong last night too. It's a double negative. So I'm going to take the two negatives out and state it as a positive. So we have a high priest which can be touched with the feeling of our infirmities. This is that. Just remember, God knows and cares about the emotions you're going through. We have this tendency to think if we're going through these bad emotions, he must not care. And his own statement is he does care and does know. And he can be present with you through those transitions, even the ones you don't want, the hard things that happen to us, that God can be present in those. Sometimes we have to look for him. So this doesn't say he'll be obvious to us. But his promise that he's there. And if you seek him, you'll find him and have him present in that. So the last of the redemptive qualities of transitions is they can help us understand ourselves better. We don't contemplate that much when life's going good and things are nice. We just, cash the check and put it in the bank and decide when to go on vacation and take our kids and go out and play. And, all those, we just do that and don't. It doesn't push us to think through who we are. So transitions can be good for us if we will let that happen, if we will use it as a time of learning. So a couple, somebody asked about this morning, I'm going to say it here also. When we talk about thinkers and feelers, people are not just one or just the other on all of these kind of dichotomies. They tend to be continuums, but it's helpful to look at the ends in order to understand who we are. So if you're trying, you think, well, not really either, or sometimes I change, that's all fine. But generally, people will be thinkers. These are the ones that even in difficult transitions and losses, they go right to, okay, what are we going to do? What's the next step? And they're driving the feeler crazy because they want to share their feelings. So before I go through the rest of that, how many of you know what you are? How many of you are the thinkers? So it's like, what are we going to do? What's the logic? What's the data? And how many of you are feelers? Like, you have to understand each other and share it. Okay. So know that, and again, I noticed some of you are both the same. That's not necessarily a good thing because you can get stuck in doing and not deal with emotions, or you can get stuck in just talking about the emotions and you don't move on to what needs to be done. So both are necessary, but it's difficult. One person is logical. The other is wanting to take time to share their feelings. One person is, okay, and so what are the facts? So even, when there's a tragic death, one person is, when do we talk to the undertaker? Do you think we should have the other one's like, what? I'm hurting. Can we talk about that first? That this is really hard. Do we have to go to the details? And it doesn't matter if that's about losing a job or about any of those hard transitions. So the thinker is going to go to, they're going to find their assistance in problem solving. The feeler is going to find their assistance in somebody who will listen. They're looking for empathy. The thinker is, what's the data? How much is this going to cost? Or how do we change where we are? The thinker will assistance with reestablishing healthy control to move forward, but the feeler wants to be understood first. So you've got that. You have it on your slides. Just process that of who you are. And like all of these, the right place to be is whichever one is functional at the time. So in a difficult transition, there should be emotions. There should be some processing of emotions, but there has to be decisions made also. Somebody has to decide, do we change our lifestyle, or do we contact people, or do we engage others, or do we move forward? So they're both good. They need to be engaged in a rational kind of way. And this is about, again, a dichotomy, but you don't have to be one or the other. This one probably, I would say this one, you need to be on the planning side, not the tripping side. We'll go over that, but you need to recognize if you tend to be somebody who trips. So the planning is looking at options and doing it based on stewardship. So looking for scripture and what would God call you to do. And so you're in a different place now. So If it's a good transition, you just got promoted, your income's high, what do you do with that? But also, if you got demoted, you have to change job, income is lower, how do you adjust that? Where do those changes happen? So think through that and use good stewardship values for it. Focus on what you can do today, not how is this going to affect us next year. You aren't to next year yet. You can't do anything about that. You need to think about today, what can I do? I'm not saying you shouldn't think about the future. You've got to do that also. But be careful about not getting caught in the future and not dealing with the present. And a high awareness of God's grace in the future, that he will be present. As we walk through this, he's still going to be there. So the trippers, and this one I won't ask you who they are, but the trippers are mentally playing out future scenarios. So every bad possibility which can happen, and they'll do this. It's one of my most frustrating things at work. What if this, what if this, what if this, and what if this? It's like, we don't have time, energy, nor the intelligence to deal with all those possibilities. We're going to have to figure out which one's going to happen first and then just deal with that one. But the future tripper does all of the possible scenarios that could play out, and it leads to frozenness because it's too many things to deal with. Or it's just all based on worry, uncertainty, and anxiety. So that's an easy place to go. That's the emotion that comes forward, but nothing will happen there. They will get lost in that, and there's not rational thinking through of, no, what can we control? What things will work? Focusing on what is not in one's personal control. So just my mind right now goes to, this is the problem child. I'm not talking about the problem 2-year-old. I'm talking about the problem 18-year-old, the mm-hmm. one that's, you know, not coming home at night, or that's in a relationship that's a disaster. And parents will say, but if that happens, if they stay with that person, this is like, and you're thinking you can change that, how? You know, that's not within your control. The things that are within your control is your relationship with that child, how you interact with them. And if they ask you advice, that's within. But stick with the things you actually can have impact on. We tend to go to the ones beyond that because they concern us. Like, what will happen to our company next year if this? Well, I don't know what's going to happen, but you're not going to be able to do it. What can you control now? What are the things that you have under your control? And the future tripper has a limited awareness of God's grace and provision of the future. Because they get lost in all the what-ifs, they don't come back to the God's presence and willingness and his resources. So we need to work to get out of the future tripping. That's an easy place to go. In the moment where we're doing all the what-ifs and oh-nos and we have to's that aren't based in reality. I'm going to put both these up. And so this is similar again. We need to work on remembering and not dredging. So if we think of transitions as an opportunity to worship, an opportunity to understand ourselves, so this is an opportunity to look at ourselves and see who are we. So remembering, it's useful. Consider the past without being consumed by it. Remembering, we're able to remember both positive and painful events. We're able to learn from past events. And it doesn't freeze us or tie us to those past failures. That happened. It's over. It's said it's like, what can I do going forward? But the dredging tends to over-focus on the negative or the painful aspects, live in regret, allow the past to haunt us, and just tie to the discouragement and the depression. So that sounds like criticizing one side or another. That's not my point. This is about, if you remember, this transition, this redeeming quality is learning to understand ourselves better. So if you recognize yourself as kind of being over on that dredging side, you need to consider it's not a functional place to be. The point of this is to know that and to work to try to come over on that rational, remembering the full picture, the good and the bad, and what the impact was on you. And we're going to grab a couple minutes because I don't see anybody outside trying to get in, just to see. When you came into this today, are there any specific questions you had that you were hoping to have addressed that you haven't heard? Not because we can answer them, but just so we can talk about them. But is anybody willing to share why are you here? Why'd you pick this session over the other ones? Yeah. Okay, so I'm going to repeat because we have online, I don't think they can pick you up, but just recognizing, if I don't say it right, tell me, but recognizing the busyness of life in some of those transitions, you haven't processed through all the pieces and the need to still deal with those. So it's a good point. Sometimes transitions have passed, we've moved on, we're in the new place, but we haven't worked through all the things related to those. And some of them still need to be picked up and brought to the present. Yeah. So it would have to do with that some, trying to step into the future and not get caught in it. And again, you know I don't have the answer to all those things, but we have to be careful to address the ones we can. So if there's been disconnect with each other or other people or decisions not made, we need to do those. If there are things that can't be impacted, let go. You know, that's really challenging, but sometimes there are things, nothing's going to be done about that, and just to release those, but seeing the difference between those. Any other, anybody else willing to say what you were hoping to hear about or get an answer to? Or any other comments on material that came up? If not, I just want to say thanks for coming. We appreciate the chance to share. We encourage you in whatever those transitions are. I would say may they all be good ones, except that's not real. I would say may you deal with grace and may you learn and understand yourself better as you go through the hard ones. There is a place on the other side of those if we go into keeping God present in those decisions. Any other closing comments?
No, it's good. Thank you.
Okay.
Thanks for coming.
So we have a short break, and I think we're supposed to reassemble at 11:15 or however close we can get to that. Thanks for being with us.